What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp. It's the Fightful Select Backstage Report podcast for March 18th, 2024. We're here to talk about the scoops that we had throughout the last week, with the big news of the last week being Mercedes Moné is officially All Elite. But she's been officially All Elite for quite some time. Sources confirmed to Fightful and Matt Men's Andrew Zarian that Moné has been on the AEW payroll for well over 2 months. With some sources saying that they believe the deal was effectively agreed upon back in December when Mercedes landed several trademarks in relation to her name. Those we have spoken to believe the contract is multi-year, but we are working to confirm that. In addition, we're told that New Japan Pro Wrestling expects to be factored into this deal, and they were under the impression as of January they would be able to continue work with Mercedes in a big way. Sources in the company said that they hoped that they could pick up where things left off with her last year, but AEW would be her priority. So, Mercedes suffered a severe injury last May that had sidelined her for 10 months. We're told that it required two surgeries, and even when she was negotiating other deals, it was made clear she wasn't ready for an in-ring return. So, I'm going to highlight this order of events as they happen. We did this on the post-AEW Dynamite show, but I'm going to streamline it. Mercedes got injured last May. She had big plans in New Japan, obviously didn't come to fruition. She was still very much injured when she appeared at AEW All In, but AEW was working on the assumption that those two were going to work together in the future. They had a bit of a tentative agreement there. There are often things that, you know, get rumored that don't get reported, and one of them were that Mercedes was going to appear on the Grand Slam broadcast. AEW, very, very definitively denied that rumor and said that is not happening, it's not in the plans, and we don't think we can get away with her appearing in a walking boot again when she's not going to be back for a while. They also clarified that they didn't think that she was going to be ready for the upcoming Wrestle Dream show either, and that was even on the record with Tony Khan. Like, he said that at a post-show scrum. So early December rolls around and we follow up with AEW and they tell us, well, there are no longer active plans to work with Mercedes. We have been in talks. We're a little bit far apart on terms. And as of now, it's not in the working plans. At that point, I figured out that WWE had been talking to her. The WWE Day One secret reveal of The Rock. So I came across some information that indicated a WWE champion was going to appear at Day One. I sent that to people in WWE, and they're like, well, we're not going to tell you who it is, but we will tell you that is accurate, that we are working on somebody like that. And I think they probably like the buzz associated with that. And when somebody on Twitter asked, oh, well, is it going to be this person or this person? I had a bit of an off-the-hand remark that said it could be Bob Backlund or Sasha Banks. I don't know. I didn't have any indication at that point. WWE got back to me and they said, well, it is not Sasha Banks, because we had conversations with her. They were very friendly. We respect that she believes she is worth this amount, but we could not come to terms with her on a deal. Well, there's usually one reason why they would indicate something like that to me, and that's because she effectively had an agreement with AEW at that point. Mercedes had ceased talks with WWE and had continued talks with AEW. And by that weekend, I had been told that she was planned to come into the company, but she wasn't cleared. Now, there were stories the following week that New Japan had wanted to do Mercedes versus Julia at Battle in the Valley. Now, I saw people say, like, oh, well, this was just fan booking. No, there were reports out there that New Japan wanted to do that. And I heard from some very frustrated New Japan sources that said, no, we couldn't have done that. She's not cleared. They said if she was cleared for Battle in the Valley, we would have tried to have her for Wrestle Kingdom as well. Their line of thinking was, we don't want our fans to think that we held back anything from this show when it's clear we're about to lose some big names from our company. And WWE was adamant for the weeks that followed that they had no conversations with Mercedes after that, including up until the week of the Royal Rumble. They reiterated to me, she is not planned for the Royal Rumble. It would be contract tampering if we did speak with her in that definition of the term. By like early January, AEW was discussing ways to bring her in. There were a lot of rumors about the January 3rd or 4th Dynamite, whatever that was, and then the Homecoming Dynamite. Both of those were discussed, but it was quickly determined that AEW Dynamite Big Business would happen at the TD Garden, and that show would kick things off for her. They did that, and they had Bayley, Trinity. I'm so used to calling her Trinity now. Bayley, Naomi, Tamina were there. That was good to see them supporting. We'll have more on that this week as well, but this is becoming much more normal within pro wrestling as well. By the time the Royal Rumble had rolled around, Mercedes' impending debut in AEW was a foregone conclusion to wrestlers and staff. They had seen that the TD Garden show was set for March and the like. But I want to thank Andrew Zarian so much for all the great reporting that he did as well on this, because he took a lot of grief from people as a result of just reporting factual information and accurate information and all that. So shout out to our good friend Andrew Zarian for all the great work that he not just does there, but does in general. One of the best doing this. And just as I was recording this, Mercedes Moné's contract is confirmed as being a multi-year deal. So if you're a new subscriber, at least since we started to report on this Mercedes stuff, welcome. Hope you like what you're hearing, seeing, reading. We've got a little bit of everything here. Check out our Discord as well. If you ask for help in the comments getting on that, we will make sure that you get that help. But I'm really enjoying that. It's definitely much better than Twitter, that's for sure. Although I love interacting with so many of you over there as well. Let's talk about a person who left AEW for WWE, Sean Spears. So it was very flattering. Sean Spears wanted to make sure that we were the first outlet that he spoke to after leaving AEW and joining NXT. And that is never lost on me. Like he knows that we try to approach this with accuracy and some respect in that regard. And it's very flattering that you guys are the audience specifically that he wanted to speak to first. And it was great. That and the Swerve interview that I did, like I hadn't been able to do many long form interviews of late. And those are two of my favorite that I've done. Sean Spears, he confirmed his departure was an amicable one from AEW. And he said that being professional in his career is necessary because it'd be hard for anyone to say that he's not been. And he said that he's a big believer in the word professional wrestler. And he said that's paramount to him compared to the second word wrestler. And he said leaving AEW was the same as when he left WWE in 2019, which was amicable. He said that having things like that will prevent it from getting nasty. They don't need to get to that point. Now, he also said that he believed that the decision to leave was best for him and his family. And he said that returning to WWE was important for him. And that once the opportunity came for him to go to NXT, he jumped all over it. He said WWE is on fire. He trains people very close there. He's got a bit of a presence there helping out. He spends quite a bit of time at the Performance Center as well. So it's clear he has some sort of, even if it's not an official role, a player coach role. Now, this differs a lot from like Grizzled Young Vets who had told us they were just effectively NXT talent. Like they were not required to be there training at the PC every day or anything like that. They were NXT talent and they would come and they would do their shots and all that. Now, he would also say that NXT was just the perfect place for him to go to, and they would say, well, why didn't you want to go to Raw or SmackDown? And he said, well, NXT's killing it too. He's been back for a few weeks. The talent's blown him away, and it takes him back to when he first started to train and reminded him of his time at the Performance Center as well. He said it was very important for him to be able to go to work, help out people, but then also get to see his wife and child in the morning and also go to bed at home. He said that he gets to hang out and learn from Shawn Michaels, Matt Bloom, throughout all that as well. And he said that when he was leaving AEW, people were offering a helping hand, and it came down to him conversing with his wife, weighing his options. What it came down to was he reached out to WWE, and they said, yeah, we would love to have you back. And they talked about how quickly the return came along. Now, that being said, he did tell me that he did shoot his shot for the Royal Rumble, but it was a little too late to make that happen. But his return was kept very secret. I mean, obviously, we're in the business of sometimes spoiling secrets, sometimes reporting news. And it's one of those things where something like that happens. We just try to gain any additional information we can on it. And Corey Brennan was able to find out that Shawn Michaels stood in for Sean Spears during the walkthroughs. He was listed as quote man on the internal rundowns, which was something that, I had found out subsequently. And Sean Spears confirmed all that. And he's like, yeah, I was there. He's like, we were just keeping it very, very quiet. He's like, I was in a trailer or the truck or whatever it may be. And he was kept in a room for most of the day to keep everything quiet. He spoke really fondly of the 2017 Royal Rumble, which is one of my favorite live experiences, was hearing that crowd chant 10 as they knew he was coming out. And he said that it was very nice to see the validation from his peers that clapped for him in Gorilla as well. He talked about some of his students like Colton Gunn, Kiana James. I had brought up Emily Jay, who just appeared on ROH from Flatbacks, and he said he's very proud of what they've done there as well. Also put over Josiah Williams, that incredible theme. He said that he had made attempts to keep that as well, but he said that they made a decision to work with the Sean Spears name instead of the Tyler Dillinger or Ty Dillinger name, because he just felt like that was something that was more tangible to him. We also spoke about Chris Danger, about his AEW Toronto appearance, all that good stuff. Bloodsport and WWE. Fightful Select reported on Friday, March 15th, that multiple WWE talent were scheduled to compete at Bloodsport. We know of one, Shayna Baszler. Now, this was not the first time that Bloodsport, GCW have tried to make this happen. They reached out to WWE about Jessamyn Duke a few years ago, and probably Shayna as well, but definitely Jessamyn Duke, and it wasn't a possibility. But we're told by WWE that Josh Barnett actually called Triple H, and they go way back. They've been friends for years, or known each other for years at least, have a great respect for one another, and Josh Barnett wanted to work with Shayna Baszler. I don't know of her having any WrestleMania plans, so this probably is like her WrestleMania, getting to carry on the lineage of Billy Robinson and many other catch wrestling legends, but we're told that there have been more contacted as well. And I don't know if those will come to fruition, but as of Friday, there were multiple planned. Now, there were some people that were like, oh, WWE and GCW working together again. No, that was a rib a few years ago. It's one that WWE wouldn't deny for a while, but then eventually did. But Orange Crush, who's a co-owner of Jersey Championship Wrestling, great fella, had a suite. And several GCW talent and staff were in the suite, and Stephanie McMahon just goes by and greets everyone who invested in one, regardless of their affiliation with GCW. But people from both companies got a good laugh out of it. But I'm very excited about that GCW Bloodsport WWE connection. Very cool. Shibata, Brian Danielson happened on Collision. We're told that Shibata was forced to return in November because of visa issues, which were just rectified last week. The CM Punk Booker T non-story. This is Booker T being Booker and just conjuring up some attention and all that. Look at how we wrote the article when he claimed that. We said that we hadn't heard of anything of that nature, and it's just, quite frankly, Booker being Booker likely. And that's exactly what people said. People told me that Punk has been very helpful and open to lending a hand anytime he's been backstage at NXT. Since his return to WWE, has not caused any trouble. Now, Corey Brennan was told that people expressed surprise that Booker would make such a claim without offering more context. Security was not made aware of any confrontation. No talk of an incident. There's nothing like that. Like, nobody there knew what the hell Booker was talking about. And there were also people that told us that there was some frustration there, given that Punk's history around backstage altercations is well known, that he would kick up something like that when things had went well. Some more notes from Corey Brennan. He said that Punk was backstage at the show but kept a lower profile than previous visits. Many people within NXT weren't aware he was there until photos made the rounds. Joaquin Wilde was supposed to get some more distance on his dive, leading to leaving OTM to recover to catch him in time. But Joaquin continues to draw praise for his willingness to partake in such large spots. Backstage reaction to the show was largely positive, one source noting that everyone was happy with the episode. Tatum Paxley popped out of a hidden compartment during NXT to rush Roxanne Perez. Paxley entered that hidden compartment underneath the stands for the segment. Carmelo Hayes was not at the show. There's a recent influx of pre-tape vignettes that's supposed to continue Ariana and Gigi Dolan's low blow spot was one that caught many off guard, but the women were credited with selling the rare finish that we saw. Some great news out of New Japan. They have re-signed Gabe Kidd. He is a guy that everybody looks at and they're like, you know what? As long as everything goes smoothly, he can be a big talent for them. I mean, I know I saw it when I first interviewed him and I was like, okay, he sells pro wrestling matches like MMA fights. He does. That's the way Will Ospreay does it a lot as well. It worked out incredibly for him, and it's working out great for Gabe Kidd. He just loves to talk that shit, and he's really, really good at it. But his deal was up at the end of January, as Fightful Select had reported. So he worked that major cage match and the previous New Japan Cup matches without a contract, and just 26 years old, re-signed this past weekend. That is a big one for New Japan. Garrett Borden, who played the Surfer Sting in Sting's final match, Sting's son, obviously, spoke to In the Weeds. Really, really good talk that they had. Said Garrett and Steven have been spending time the last few years watching old Sting footage and have gained a new perspective on their father's career as well. They recently went back and watched the reveal of the Crow Sting in WCW and said it's one of the coolest things they've ever seen. Garrett found out in early 2024 that he and his brother would for sure be involved in that match, but the conversations also began in like January of 2022, he said. But he had 7.5 weeks to prepare for his role in the match. He assumed he would be Surfer Sting and that Steven would be some version of Crow Sting. They discussed the Stinger splash spots the day before the match. They were set in stone the day of the match as well. Garrett says he's going to be keeping the blonde hair, and he said it was a shock at first, but he and his wife realized it just looked good on him as well. Garrett also said he had a split second where he thought the pop was for him until he realized the audience thought like he was actually Sting. They had no idea about the big spots that Sting was going to do in the match until they happened as well. Check that out, man. Just an incredible amount of stuff in that interview. Also, we interviewed Swerve. Oh, man, he talked about big pressure, about the pride he has, and that becoming such a hit. He said Nana came in, added the dance, and he said that they don't play alike, and that makes them successful, and compare that to Shaq and Kobe, Jesse Pinkman and Walter White. I loved that comparison. We also talked about the Hangman Page feud, and he really put over Will Washington, a Grapsody vet there who has since moved on to AEW, for a lot of the vision of that as well, and said that Will Washington came up with the idea because they didn't have a direction for Swerve after Wembley. Swerve said they wanted to get Hangman back into singles action because he was working in the trios. He said that he views his character sort of like Wesley Snipes in Demolition Man. He was an evil person, but still some people sympathize and like it. Said the character would steal from people. You'd look at him as a criminal and a wrongdoer. But if you follow the story and watch how and why they're under the ground coming up trying to take from the rich so they can eat and provide. And that's what Swerve wanted to do. He wanted to take from Hangman so he could provide for himself. We also went into the intricacies of the Texas Death Match, and he said, at the time, you're trying to make sure that certain points of the match are laid out so people would understand it. Wanted to make sure that it read properly, but he wanted the match to be more than two guys bludgeoning each other, and he wanted fans to know there was a motive behind it. And when I asked his reaction to the blood drinking spot, and he said, that's a lot of blood. He also really put over working with Will Washington, saying that because of his extensive history with Will Washington, they're cousins. Will knows him. Will goes to bat for him. Will understands his voice and what works for him, as well as his limitations and the things that work well for him as well. Also spoke about Will Ospreay, Sting, just a ton of stuff there as well. And regarding to Darby Allin's injury, John Alba of Fight TV, Strictly Business, Extreme Life, and Sports New York TV had heard Wednesday night that he was on crutches after the show, was openly discussing how he got injured. For those asking, Brock Lesnar was never removed from the online roster page, much less added back. Fightful will have staff at WrestleMania, WrestleCon, Supercard of Honor, Squared Circle Expo, all in the week leading up to WrestleMania. Media were also told there was no post-show press conference planned for ROH Supercard of Honor. Now, there's something around SmackDown that I feel like some people were a little irresponsible in aggregating. You can't assume when you do any of this. We had noted The Rock's concert was only scheduled for one segment internally, but people backstage said, of course, they thought it would go longer. We didn't indicate whether or not it went longer or went over because we don't have that information. Brian Gewirtz said that it was allotted for 20 minutes. The only thing we can really do is compare that. You had The Rock scheduled for one segment. You had Angel Garza and Humberto scheduled for two. That match ended up getting 11 minutes with entrances and post-match, but that doesn't have to be relative to anything. We often do stats where we time matches, we time the segment length to get a better understanding of that. LA Knight's interview was not listed on internal rundowns. Natalya confirmed a very rare stat that Fightful posted. Since she started wrestling, she has never taken 3 months off in a row. That is insane. Now, there were some changes to WWE Raw. Original run sheets had Ricochet losing to Bronson Reed in the opening gauntlet match, and then he would lose to Sami Zayn. However, JD McDonough was planned to be the third person eliminated. That was changed Monday afternoon, and JD ended up being eliminated first. Top Dollar was also backstage at Raw. He's been working, you know, MLW, TNA, stuff like that. But he was in town for other obligations and cleared being backstage with Triple H. We also dropped that Candice LeRae interview that we did a little while back, but we talked about Cleveland football, and she said that she didn't have a football team, but liked the underdog, and Johnny Gargano said, I have the team for you. She also talked about the lumbar check she got from Cedric Alexander, said that it goes viral every year. When she got hit with that, she didn't know it was going to be a big deal, but they didn't practice it. She just believed that she could do that. Candice said that she got cleared after her pregnancy, returned to the PC as soon as possible, and she was back in a ring by the 8th or 9th week, rolling around a little bit, and that's when she realized she could do this again. And they were trying to figure things out when her contract expired, and Candice told Johnny she thought she would return to the Indies, and Johnny was like, no, don't do that, and said that Hunter reached out, and it was a no-brainer, and it worked, and she wanted to go back there. Guys, thank you all so much. Until next time, we're out.